now listening to the Serious Growth Podcast with your host, Leo Costa Jr.
Yeah, buddy. You know who says that? Yeah, buddy. People that are in the bodybuilding industry knows that Ronnie Coleman, he loves saying that. Yeah, buddy. Yeah, buddy. Anyway, listen, what I want to talk about today is why 95% of trainers fail in the industry. And to be specific, I mean that they fail as a trainer. But before I do that, I want to go ahead and sort of talk about how I got into the business and eventually got into the business in a way in health and fitness that it became something that I competed at a pretty high level. And it really happened when I was, you know, I was an athlete all my life. And there came that one day where sports was not going to be a part of my life. I wanted to be a pro football player, pro baseball player. But, you know, just like life, you just don't know how things are going to work out. I got hurt in football pretty bad. I ended up in a hospital with a collapsed lung, punctured lung, almost died from it. And I talked myself into thinking that that was a sign for me and that maybe it was time for me to get out of sports. It was heartbreaking because it was one of those things that when that's your childhood dream and that's all you want to do, I mean, it doesn't take a smart person to figure it out that when that's gone, that is devastating in some ways because, you know, as you get older, you start realizing that most people don't live their dream when it comes to the kind of work that they do. Oftentimes you have to settle, you know, because you got to pay bills. And it's just something that you're walking through life, you know, just going to a job, but you don't have the passion. And when you have the passion for something, it's a game changer. And it's almost as if nothing else will be good enough. And yet, like with me, I decided not to continue my sports career. So my fallback position at that point was to play it safe. You know, I'm just out of college. And playing it safe for me at that point was that we had a family dairy that was in the business for 50 years. And it was supposed to be left to the next generation. And I was one at next generation. And that's what I did. And, you know, my gut told me when I did that, that it wasn't the right thing to do, but it was the only thing that I knew at that point, the safest thing that I could do to make money. So I ended up on a family dairy, and sure enough, in a few years, 3 or 4 years, I got married, had the kids, like a lot of people do, and I really started feeling like I made a huge mistake because going to work, I was that person. I didn't look forward to it. I did it, but it was like I just kept looking at my watch, couldn't wait to get off. And when you get in that sort of position, it's depressing, it's sad, it's frustrating, and it impacts you in a way and other people in a pretty harsh way because you're not happy with yourself. And then you end up taking it out on other people sometimes. And the only way that I could resolve the issue for myself was to make a promise. And my promise to myself was this. If I ever got a chance to do something again that gave me that buzz, that passion like I had for sport, I made the promise that I would not question that because what you're dealing with there at that point is what your gut's telling you. Because keep in mind, when you have family that you're trying to provide for, you know, to go off and do what I ended up doing, which was I had a buddy of mine that came by and saw me. I was working on the dairy and I'd gotten out of shape. When you're an athlete and you're always in shape, when you're out of shape, it's pretty weird. And I had gotten probably in the worst shape of my life. And a buddy of mine told me he hadn't seen me for quite a while. And he said, "What the hell happened to you?" I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "You look like shit. You look like hell." you're out of shape. Why don't you exercise or something? Well, I'm on a dairy and I'm working my ass off. And my excuse was, and it was in part an excuse, but it was also the truth. I said, man, I'm working all the time. It's hard for me to find time to do that. Well, he said, why don't you lift weights? Back then in 1980. And believe it or not, you know, when I was in school playing football, which was earlier than the 80s, but when I was playing football, at the position that I played, they didn't want us lifting weights. That I was considered a specialty position, and they just said, you're going to create a situation where you won't be as mobile, you're going to get tied up, bound, too tight to play that position, which we know now wasn't true. But back then, that's what the thinking was with coaches. In football, linemen were the ones that were in the weight room hitting it. I never got in a weight room. And so for my buddy to tell me to go lift weights, I mean, I had to teach myself how to do that, believe it or not. I knew a little bit about lifting, but not much at all. So to cut this story a little bit shorter, what I ended up doing is I knew how to weld. I got pieces from some iron from the dairy. I got magazines, and I started reading up on it was a muscle and fitness magazine. And I just started reading about training, about diet. And the next thing I know, I built equipment. I put it in my garage. I started training, learning via a magazine. We didn't have YouTube back then, social media like we do now. And I started learning about exercise and training. And I tell you what happened. In 6 months, I could see a change in me. And that's when the bug started biting me. I was getting into this thing. And the next thing you know, I grew my little home gym, and I got into a health club down the road. And you know something? Here's the thing. A lot of people make excuses. But if the motivation is great enough, because an excuse many times is just an excuse, or it's a legitimate obstacle. But when the motivation is such that you have to do something. At this point, I had to keep weightlifting. I was getting into this thing. The more I got into it, the better I looked, the better I felt. I wanted to learn more. And so I figured out, I got past the obstacle of not finding time to be able to go down to a gym down the street about 2 miles away. So I did. I joined a gym. I'm in the weight room training. And the next thing you know, there's a guy that's working in the weight room. And that guy that worked in the weight room saw something in me, because he saw how hard I worked. Because when I get into something that I have passion for, I get into this mindset that nothing can get in my way. Nothing can beat me. Nothing will beat me. I get like that, obsessed with it. And that's where I was when I was in that weight room. That person that was in the weight room, he was also a trainer. He was overlooking the weight room to make sure nobody got hurt. And he approached me one day, and he told me that I should think about competing in a bodybuilding show. And for him to tell me that was the furthest thing that I could think of myself doing. I mean, to get up in front of a crowd in a Speedo, basically, and then be judged on your body, that was a rough one. That was a tough pill for me to think that I could take. All right, let's take a quick break so I can tell you about our product.
Do you want a bone-crushing grip? Good, because you're going to get one with the amazing new TRS Gripper. It's a progressive grip builder with longer handles and a special ergonomic design that's like a dozen hand grippers in one. Start off easy and work your way up to quickly build your grip strength from wet noodle to pulverizing. The package includes a video from the world-famous strength coach, Dr. Russ Horine, the man who worked with Leo Costa to help bring you big beyond belief in the Bulgarian Power Burst. Dr. Horine shows you a simple and easy to follow workout plan that takes just minutes a day right from in front of your TV set if you want. So click on the link below and let's get started building you a stronger, firmer, bone-crushing grip.
But, you know, again, I had the motivation and I had the passion. And I took that leap. That guy that ended up getting me up on stage is still my business partner today. We connected. He helped me get ready for a show. And that's where it all began for me. I did my first show, and that's what changed my life forever. Because at this point in my life, I look back now, and I was actually in a crisis, a crossroad crisis. And we're all going to face crossroads in our life. It's not if, but when. But I was there, 27 years of age. I now had joined a gym, and I competed in a competition. After that show, I knew that I wanted to be a bodybuilder. I wanted to do that. And that was that moment where I had to reflect back, and because I made a promise to myself, and I said, if I ever get a chance to do something that has gives me passion and buzz in the belly, that I would not question that. So you can imagine that, again, I'm married. So I go home to my wife at that point, and I said, I'm making a change in my life, in my work career. And when I told her that I wanted to not only be a bodybuilder, but that I wanted to start a personal training business, she thought I was out of my fucking mind. Because back then, in my town, in 1980-ish, there was no one doing personal training. You could find a personal trainer like in the bigger cities like LA or San Francisco, but not in my town. And it was pretty funny because when I got into it, so I jumped and I got into it. She freaked out. We got past that part of it. And what I did to get myself started in the business is I got completely away from the dairy business. And at that time, my wife's father owned restaurants. I became a short order cook on the weekends and just on, you know, times that didn't interfere with me trying to build my personal training business. And again, when you have the motivation, you figure out ways. There's no excuse unless you can't physically or mentally do something, as far as I'm concerned. So I did what I had to do to make my dream happen. So I was a short order cook. And what I started doing, because I understood that me, when I was talking, when I was in the gym, people would ask me how I was training because I continued to train. They'd ask a lot of questions. And this is how I got the idea of becoming a personal trainer, because I was having so many people approach me when I was training. I thought, maybe I can do something with this. But I also did realize that I had to educate people in my town, because people thought when I told them I was a personal trainer, they asked me if I was an aerobics instructor. We had no personal trainers in town. So I'm like dealing with something that I was going to be climbing uphill on this thing, because nobody knew what a trainer was. Not only that, I didn't know what I should charge for something like this. I had no reference, no one to, you know, to ask questions to. So what I did is I got some really good advice from somebody. He said, Leo, go after friends and family in the very beginning when you're trying to build your business, because they'll be a little more tolerant in giving you a chance, and it'll give you time to figure out what your craft is. That's probably some of the best information and advice that I could have gotten. So that's what I did. I trained my friends, I trained my family, and then what I did is I purchased a body fat testing machine, because that was another way for me to make income. And what I did back then is, while I was doing friends and family, I was going out to health clubs with this body fat testing machine, and I was doing body fat testing. While I was there at these health clubs doing body fat testing, I told them, look, if you ever need somebody to help you with your diet and exercise, I'm doing personal training. That's how I got my business started, was right there. My dad once told me, and Einstein also said the same thing. My dad said, it's hard to replace firsthand experience. Albert Einstein said it in a way that true knowledge is through experience. So what I knew I had to do was I had to experience everything that I possibly could in the gym that was tied into the three components that are most responsible for changing the body in the most efficient way. I had to know everything about weight training, about cardiovascular conditioning, about nutrition. Now, you can see that in order to do this the right way, it takes time. You can't get in a hurry to learn those three components, because that is the blood and oxygen of your business. When you know those three components to the nth degree, I call it, then you have command. You can change people's bodies. You can change people's minds and how they feel in the most efficient way. And so that's what I did. That launched my bodybuilding career. This has been now 39 years since that happened. And I have to tell you, one of the most harrowing things for me back then when I started, because I knew I had to educate people or I'd be dead in the water, because you have to make people understand what it is that you do in a succinct way, in a very specific way. They get it. And one of my biggest fears back then was public speaking. The thought of getting in front of people, because what I did is at these health clubs that I went to, I had them sign up, for the body fat testing. But how I got them to sign up was I would talk to the classes before they started their aerobics classes. And I basically, that was my platform in a very short period of time to let people know why they needed to do a body fat test. Because I got asked a very interesting question one time. And the person said, why should I have you test me to tell me how fat I am? And that was a really good question. And you have to be able to answer questions like this when people are asking you about what you do. And of course, I told them, I said, look, it's not about me telling you how fat you are. It's about me coming up with a solution to get you in better shape. And the body fat test is one of the things that I needed to do in order to help these people do that. So that's how my whole career got started. And I have to tell you, and I have to admit, I'm doing what I love and what I have passion for. And 39 years later, I have just as much enthusiasm for what I do as I did when I first started. Maybe even more, because I appreciate it in a different way. And so here we are. Where I'm at now today, to stay relative, I decided that I wanted to keep teaching other trainers that are in the industry, because 95% of trainers who get into the industry fail. And the reason that they fail is because, again, I just mentioned it, they don't understand the three training components to the nth degree. They gloss over. Most of the trainers are pretty good of those three components. They're pretty good about the training part of it. But, you know, it's when you put three things together like these components and you can do them all right, now you're training smarter as well, or you're training as smart as you are hard. Because if you just train hard, you're not going to get the kind of results when you know the three components and you can manipulate them in a way to the point where not only can you produce a result, but you can reproduce the result in a very timely way. So this is where I see that part of why most trainers fail, because they don't really understand that to the nth degree. Let's take a quick pause to tell you about something you are definitely going to want.
Do you want a bone-crushing grip? Good, because you're gonna get one with the amazing new TRS Gripper. It's a progressive grip builder with longer handles and a special ergonomic design that's like a dozen hand grippers in one. Start off easy and work your way up to quickly build your grip strength from wet noodle to pulverizing. The package includes a video from the world-famous strength coach, Dr. Russ Horine, the man who worked with Leo Costa to help bring you Big Beyond Belief and the Bulgarian Power Burst. Dr. Horine shows you a simple and easy to follow workout plan that takes just minutes a day right from in front of your TV set if you want. So click on the link below and let's get started building you a stronger, firmer, bone-crushing grip.
So in addition to understanding the three components to the nth degree, because again, you have to think about this when you're building your business. You have to think about it like you're when you're building a house. You, in order to be really strong and as a personal trainer and legit for a lot of years, you have to build a strong foundation. Think about like building a house. You put the foundation in first, you put the walls in second, and then you put the roof on. If you do it in any other order, you're not going to have a solid foundation. And the foundation is the longest part of the learning curve of those three components. So I can't emphasize enough that accuracy is speed. Don't get in a hurry. Do it right, ideally, the first time. Take your time, understand it, and that'll serve you well as long as you stay enthusiastic about constantly learning, because keep in mind, things do change. And you have to be, in order to stay relevant, you have to be willing to make those changes. And most of us know that change is one of the most difficult things that we have to do at times. It's brutal. And you can be stubborn about it. But I can assure you that if you're not willing to at least be open-minded about learning and continually learning, you will be dead in the water at some point. The other thing that I noticed and have noticed quite a bit with trainers is, you know, again, like I said, when I first started, I was the only one in my town. And compared to now, there's one on every street corner. And on social media, and this is, you know, this is where I start finding the reasons, because there's always a reason why things happen, cause and effect, and there's a reason why 95% of the trainers are failing. And one of the reasons is most trainers don't treat their personal training job, their personal training business, as a real business. So many of them are, it's a gig that they're doing, because I've seen this. So many of them are aspiring actors, and what they're doing is personal training on the side. I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but, you know, it's kind of like multitasking. Even though your body is very efficient and it's able to multitask, it's not the most efficient way to go about doing something. If you really want to get good, if you really want to become a master at what you're doing, you have to focus on one thing. And that's difficult. And again, I'm not saying that you can't do more than one thing, but ideally, you need to focus on one thing. So when you're an aspiring actor and you're doing personal training on the side, I think you would start to understand that because the emphasis is not on that training, it's more of a side gig than a job. And believe it or not, people can sense that. They feel that. When you're not 100% in, people can sense that you're not authentic, that you're not 100% there. And that's part of the problem in the industry. Treat it like a real job. Be consistent. Show up. So many trainers that I've worked with over the years, you know, in the very beginning, it's kind of like a honeymoon. They're all into it, and this applies to their clientele as well. They're all into it, but once that honeymoon ends, just like in a relationship, this is where you find out who the real legit trainers are. Because when a client comes in, they got fire in their ass, they're made this commitment, but you know something? People, very much like personal trainers, most people fail at their exercise program because they don't have a strong enough foundation to keep them going through. Listen, this is not always fun. There's work to be done in order to get a result, whether it's a bodybuilder who's trying to put on muscle to get to that stage. There's a lot of work that needs to be done. There's a lot of times where you're not having fun, but that's part of the process. And when you have a trainer who's legit, they are able to keep you on path. A good trainer is more than just a trainer. They are a psychologist. They are a coach. They're that person that is going to give you tough love when you're not performing or you're getting inconsistent. So in order to be able to do that, you have to have skill. You have to have tools as a trainer to keep that person going. And you can't train every single person the same. My coach and the great coaches will tell you that they have to learn how to adapt to the players that they have. They can't expect the players to adapt to the coach 100%. I mean, some will, but to get the most out of your athletes or your clients, you have to be smart enough as a trainer to know when to use tough love, for example, to know when to tell that client, look, back off for a while, not to stop, but just adjust their training to keep them going. Because once that honeymoon is over, that's the sign, that's the time when you find out how good you really are. So don't get comfortable in the honeymoon phase if you're a trainer, because again, people will feel that. You're going to get to that point where you're just basically mailing your workouts in. One of my trainers that I had years ago, the guy was he's a nice guy. People loved him. But you know something? He had one of the lowest retention rates of all the trainers that I had. Eight trainers, he had the lowest retention rate. And I didn't understand why that happened like that, until I really paid attention and watched what he was doing. He was basically just mailing it in. When that client was working out, for example, he wasn't putting himself in a position to motivate, to help that client if they needed help. He was like, for example, I'll never forget this one scene. The client was doing an incline chest press, and the trainer was leaning up against the dumbbells that were right across from the exercise that they were doing, leaning back, hands crossed, and just being there, just not being a part of that client's workout, just being there. Why in the world would a client want to continue to pay for something like that? It's one thing if you're going into the gym where you're paying $25 a month, but when you're paying $20 a session and your trainer is showing that kind of interest in you or lack thereof, you're not going to have a client for very long. And he didn't. He had the lowest retention rate of all the trainers, and that was part of the reason why. The other thing that happens with the client and trainer relationship is that the trainer gets into friend status with the client. And I'm not saying it's about building relationships, but there's a fine line there between a friendly relationship and a relationship where you have somebody who's in charge, the trainer, and the client who's coming to you for your expertise. And yet so many times I see trainers they get into the friend status, and then all of a sudden they lose control. That dynamic of who's in charge is gone. And again, these are all little things that I'm talking about that are the reasons why trainers can't make a full-time living. They're constantly working part-time. Don't let the client become the trainer. If you have to, another example. I worked with a professional baseball player, came to me, and he needed my expertise. And yet this guy, you know, this guy's making millions of bucks, and he basically thought that he knew more than I did about training, even though he came to me for my expertise. And I knew at that point that if I didn't get his attention, that I would lose that client, because he thought that I should be doing certain exercises for him, even though he came to me. you know, to help him get better and not only get more conditioned, but to be a better athlete on the field. So I used a technique that I call wipe the slate clean. I had to put this guy through a workout, and I did it on purpose. This is a part of tough love. I had to do it on purpose to where I made him sick. And I did it in a way that, because he always thought that he should be lifting more weight. And that's not the case when you're training athletes. There are times that you do, but there are a lot of different applications that you must use. One of them is explosive power movements, training movements, exercises to make him more explosive on the field. And this guy, at this point, all he knew was strength training. That's not the most effective way. So what I did with him is I used very little or no weight. I was using body through space exercises, but I put him through a workout that made him sick. He threw up because of it. And he, after that workout, he said, you know what? I never knew that I could get this kind of a workout with the types of exercises that you put me through. And the exercises that I was using was specific to his sport. I got his attention. I wiped his mind clean. He knew just enough about weight training to think that he was the expert. I wiped the slate clean. Now I had somebody that I could work with instead of constantly questioning me. And I'm not opposed to questioning, and the trainer shouldn't be. But it gets to the point where you lose that control, and that's what I'm really talking about here. The other thing that needs to be done as a trainer is, you know, first impressions are lasting. And when your client comes to you, usually the first interaction that you have with the client is they're coming to you for a consultation. A trainer who knows his stuff will understand that the initial part of that consultation, which should only last, mind you, about 4 to 7 minutes, the first part of that consultation is you as a trainer listening to the concerns and what that client wants. Too many trainers talk too much, and they don't have their listening ears on, and they're not understanding what that client really wants and really needs. So it's a fact-finding mission. Along the way, when that client is telling you what they want and what their concerns are, what I felt to be the best way to go about doing a consultation in 4 to 7 minutes is when they're talking, address their concerns and come up with a solution right away. Now, think about what that does for that client. When they have their chance to express how they feel, maybe they have injuries, maybe they're insecure, and you're able to address with a solution along the way, that gives you credibility beyond belief. And that's the reason why it should only take 4 to 7 minutes to get that done. And yet I can remember when I first started doing consultations, it would take me an hour to do a consultation. And looking back, I realized that not only is my conversion rate and was my conversion rate better doing a 4-minute consultation, I actually talked myself right out of the closing that client when I was doing an hour consultation. More is not better in most cases. But the only way that you can really do a consultation for 4 minutes or 7 minutes is when you really understand your craft. You have to understand what your unique selling proposition is. USP. I'm sure some of you heard about this. Unique selling proposition. In 25 words or less, you should be able to tell that client what makes you more unique or more qualified than the trainer that's probably about 2 or 3 blocks away from you. And if you can't do that, you really don't have an understanding of who you are as a personal trainer. And if you don't, what makes you think that client's going to turn over several hundred dollars or even thousands of dollars to you? They're not. Even though you think that you're unique in that consultation, every other trainer thinks the same way. It's very competitive. You don't have a lot of time to be able to convince somebody that you don't know to hand money over to you. And rest assured, in a consultation, if somebody leaves that consultation even though they're going to say, well, I'm just going to go think about it, 50% of the time, they won't come back. It's probably higher than that, but at least 50% of the time, when that client leaves that consultation, you've lost them. Your window is very small. You got to know your stuff to, you know, to be able to convince people that you're the person. The other thing, client's goals. A client should know when you're training them as a trainer that their goals is just as important to you as they are to them. Because think about that. When you've got a person, a trainer, and you're the client, and that trainer is doing everything that they can to try to get you in the shape that you want to get in. When they feel that you're in there with them, that's kind of like having a training partner. When I was training for competitions, I always trained with some partners. They were there for me. They pushed me. I knew I could count on them if I had to. That's what you have to do and have to be when you're dealing with clients. Their goals are as important to you as it is to them. And if you get to that point and you're consistent about that, because consistency is a big problem, not only for clients, but also for trainers. Again, as I mentioned to you, once you get past that honeymoon phase, that's when your job really kicks in, because it's hard to be consistent day in and day out. As a bodybuilder, the goal is to, when you go into the gym, to make every set, every rep count, not taking any sets off or any reps off, and to be able to come in and do that day in and day out. It's the same thing for a client. It doesn't matter when a client comes in, if you're having a bad day. It doesn't matter. And so many times, trainers wear their feelings on their sleeves, which impacts the client. It should never be that way, but it's easier said than done. Discipline is a very difficult thing. Once the motivation is gone, no matter what it is, you're going to have to rely on your discipline, because the motivation is not always there. And you'll find that with clients that come see you. They're going to have bad days. If you're a legit trainer, you know how to turn a bad day into a good day, a great day. Think about that. If you can make a client feel productive each and every time, which is difficult, each and every time, you don't think they're going to come back to you? They want to be in that environment. You have no idea how much you're impacting that client on a daily basis, because when you're training a lot of people a day, sometimes you lose sight of that and you forget that you're impacting each and every one of those clients in a certain way, and that should be your goal. All right. So now, how do you sustain and build a clientele? Because one of the hardest things to do is actually launch your business, kind of like an airplane. 80% of the energy in a flight is actually on takeoff, if I got that right. And it's the same thing when you're launching a business. And one of the things I learned was this: you first take care of the client that you have in front of you. If you do that, if you discipline yourself to do that, that client's going to tell 5 people about you. If they're unhappy with you, they're going to tell 10 people they're unhappy with you. So think about that dynamic. So if you take care of that client, each one of your clients, and they're happy, you can see that you can build a clientele from the inside out. It's called leverage marketing. You don't have to go out here and spend a bunch of money on external marketing, running ads in the paper. I know social media now changes that dynamic with newspapers, but still, it's the same idea. When you have a happy client that you've worked with, you're going to get it's word of mouth. Goes right back to word of mouth advertising. That's the strongest way for you to build your clientele. I call that inside out marketing or leverage marketing. And I tell you what, and we're going to end it up right here. And this will create a situation that will, in the minds and in the eyes of clients that come to you, will give the idea and the impression that you stand behind what you are professing to them. Don't be afraid to do two things. Don't be afraid to give free workouts. So many trainers are afraid of that. And the ones that are afraid to do that are the ones that are insecure about their own knowledge. Because here's what I've learned. I give free workouts. I've given anywhere from a week to a month. I don't care. Because what I normally do is I tell the client, look, when you come in here, I'm going to give you a free week so you can test it out. And if you join, there's no strings attached. If you want to come in and use a free week or free month, because I've done the same with both. If you like what I do with you by the third visit and you sign up by the third visit, even though you have a week, I'm going to give you a promo rate. 80% of the time, it doesn't matter if the client has gotten a week of free workouts or a month. 80% of the time, I sign those people up. And don't be afraid to give a money-back guarantee. Look, I make it very clear to the client that I'll give them a money-back guarantee. The goals that they are asking to reach, that they want to reach, have to be reachable in a reasonable amount of time. If somebody comes to me and says, I want to lose 100 pounds in a month, can you guarantee that? Well, hell no. But if it's reasonable, I tell the client, as long as you participate, as long as you're there, you as a client have to be a part of the process. You can't just be the trainer. But if you are willing to, and I lay it out what I expect from them, so there's no mystery, no surprises. In my case, I have clients come in 3 days a week. I lay out what I expect from them because people like that. You do this and this and this as a client, and if you don't get result, I'm going to give your money back to you. Or I'm going to extend, I'll extend the length of your program with me. What do you think that does for that person? Why would this guy give me a money back guarantee if he didn't think that he could produce? All these little things that we've just talked about make a huge difference. And I will tell you this, I'm going to keep going back to this. It's never easy. It's never easy to be great at your craft, no matter what it is. It's a lot of work. And the only way that you'll be able to sustain and do what I'm talking about, rest assured, is when you have passion and love for what you do. Unquestionable and unwavering love for what you do. And I will tell you this, one of the best things that I made, as scary as it was 39 years ago, was trust my gut. Trust your gut. Because everything else, I promise you, will work itself out. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Serious Growth Podcast. For more episodes like the one you just listened to, subscribe to us on your mobile podcast app and leave us a review. If you'd like to reach out, you can find us online at seriousgrowth.com. Until next time, train smart and train hard.